Good evening. Sorry for starting a little bit late, but we'd like to welcome you to the Mesa City Council meeting for Monday, October 17th, 2011. I'm Mayor Scott Smith. As always, it's an honor and privilege for me to serve and to conduct this meeting. We'll begin tonight's meeting with a prayer. We have it right here. Got to make sure I get these right. With an invocation, which will be followed by a pledge led by Scout Sam Heslop from Troop 674. Apologize for being messed up here. Please rise for the prayer and the pledge.
Let's ask God's blessing upon this service. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you're so very near and dear to us, Lord. Help these situations that are going on here to be resolved and to be voted on in the best way possible. Lord, give us a measure of peace and give us a measure of understanding. And Lord, help us to acknowledge you in all that we say and do in this meeting. Again, Lord, we ask your blessing. We ask these things in your name. Amen.
The pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. A couple items I would like to recognize and I would like to announce. We have now begun our village meetings under IMESA. The first one we had was very successful, and it's Mesa citizens' opportunity to come out and basically see what their neighbors are saying, and also to present ideas that are imaginative and creative, and that can make a real change in our community. The next one we're having is October 19th, this Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. at Power Square Mall, which is at the southeast corner of Baseline and Power. It's where our Mesa Express Library is, and so we would like to invite everyone to that. The other thing is that this Saturday, I want to make sure we know this, as part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and my involvement in that, we co-sponsor with local planning, certified financial planners and others, a financial planning day. And this Saturday, Mesa citizens have the opportunity here at the main library, I guess it's right across the street from council chambers here, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come on down. It's free. We'll have certified financial planners, and you'll be able to talk to them, and they'll be able to give you help with whatever they want. So it's totally free, totally open to all Mesa residents. So please come on down. The third thing we have is a proclamation for the Day of Play in our parks, and we'd like to invite Mark Hirschberg up. Mark, there you are. I have a script. I'm sorry. As you can tell, we spent a lot of time in rehearsal on this one. Gee, thanks, Mark. This year we celebrate the 75th anniversary of the City of Mesa Parks and Recreation Department. And, you know, we're very proud of our Parks Department. For many years, City of Mesa Parks programs, facilities have been widely recognized as being leaders in the industry. In April of 1936, the City Council approved the creation of the Mesa Parks and Recreation Department to help meet the growing demands of a community that probably had 5,000 people, if that, at the time. At the time, Mesa had a population of 7,224 and hired Joseph Jarvis as the first recreation director. Since there were no funds to pay his salary, not a whole lot's changed, has it, Mark?
No comment.
Two school board members voted to contribute $1,200 each. I wouldn't bet on it now. Jarvis was able to improve park conditions and added recreational programs. Went from a small town to we're now a big city. In May 1943, Golden Tuller was hired to succeed Jarvis. Under his leadership, five new parks were purchased: Evergreen, Stapley, Stewart, Escovedo, and Pioneer. That same year, Mesa was recognized as having one of the nation's best recreation programs. And those parks are still in use to one degree or another. Some of them are looking for a makeover, too. And over the years, Mesa Parks has grown just like the city has grown. Today, Mesa Parks Recreation Commercial Facilities serve our 440,000 students, residents that cover our nearly 140 square miles. So we're very proud. We now have 58 parks, 134 basins, 54 multipurpose athletic fields, and 8 specialty sports complexes, municipal golf courses, state-of-the-art recreation center, 1 tennis complex, 9 swimming pools and aquatics complexes. And if you really don't realize, we have a gym in our aquatics facilities, which I believe are probably, if there's a community that has better overall aquatics facilities than the city of Mesa does, I'd be surprised. I think we are the leader in the entire country for that. The convention center, the amphitheater, Holcomb Stadium, winter home of the Chicago Cubs, and the place where I find my exercise partners, Mesa Cemetery. This Saturday, the city will continue to celebrate its 75th anniversary with a community day from 6 to 9 p.m. at Red Mountain Park, and to celebrate that, we have a proclamation here that I, as mayor, a day of play to commemorate the 75th anniversary of Parks and Recreations, and we're going to commemorate this Saturday, October 22nd, as the day to commemorate and the Parks and Rec. We're very proud of our parks. We have some work to do on them. We recognize that. These challenging times have put a strain on things, but I think our parks and recs and our programs are one of the most viable assets we have in our community, and we hope that we'll continue to invest in them and continue to make Mesa a leader in this. So we have this proclamation, and now the script says I'm to turn it over to Mark Hirschberg. So Mark.
Thank you, Mayor. Our Parks and Recreation Department has come a long way in 75 years, as you highlighted, and a lot of that is attributed to the success and commitment of our staff and our volunteers. Speaking of volunteers, with me tonight is Matt Schaefer, chair of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. Also in the audience is Mark Yarbrough, past chair and current Parks Board member. But as I mentioned, the staff is truly dedicated. And those directors that you mentioned, a couple of those directors have led us down the path and built a great park system, and it's my honor and privilege to follow in their footsteps. Those past directors include Joseph Jarvis, Golden Tooler, Maury Bateman, C. Wayne Karinick, Joe Homewood, Bob White, and J. Red Evans. We're privileged this evening to have two of those former directors with us tonight, Wayne Karinick and Joe Homewood. And as a show of our appreciation, we'd like to invite them forward with a special presentation to commemorate our 75 years of service of Parks and Recreation to the Mesa community.
Well, and there's one other thing, is that I'm going to bring something, too, because we're going to commemorate the current director, too.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, and congratulations. We also have a recognition for one of our valued employees in Willie Black. Oh, there you are, Willie. We'll turn it over to Willie Black, who's director of our solid waste department, for a very special recognition. Willie?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. With me this evening is Bill Cummings, one of our equipment operators, and we're pretty proud of Bill this evening. Bill's family's here as well. I'd like to take a minute to introduce them. We've got Bill's mom, Becky Clark, and I'd like to point out Becky is one of our equipment operators as well. We've got Bill's wife, Donna, and Bill's daughter, Crystal, who's holding Bill's trophy there. It takes family when you make it to the top to support you, and Bill's family definitely is there for him. I'd like your help in recognizing Bill with his accomplishment at the Solid Waste Association North America's International Rodeo last month in Dublin, Georgia. Bill won first place in the front load competition, and this is the trophy that he was awarded with for his efforts in the competition. Not only did he win first place in the overall truck competition, Bill scored high out of everyone, and he was awarded as the top gun. And this is the jacket that he was awarded with as top gun.
Yay. So to put this in perspective, this is not the Top Gun in Mesa. This is not the Top Gun in Arizona.
No,
this is the Top Gun in the...
In the country.
In the whole United States of America.
Correct.
Yeah.
At the state competition and the international competition, we have to ensure that we're sending our best. We sent our best, and Bill came back as the best in the country. Congratulations, Bill.
Thank you very much. It's always a real honor to be able to recognize organizations and also members of our family, of our staff who excel. And we've got a lot of people and a lot of organizations who do great things in our city. So, Bill, congratulations. Thank you so very much for being a great representative of a great city. We appreciate it. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the consent agenda, which tonight will be read in by Mr. Kevin Christopher. Kevin?
Good evening. All citizens are permitted and encouraged to speak on agenda items. If you're interested in speaking, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room and give it to the city clerk. When the council considers the item, you'll be called to the podium to provide your comments. Mayor and council members, these are the items in the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the city council and will be enacted with one motion. There will be no separate discussion unless a council member or a citizen requests, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 2, approval of minutes of previous meetings as written. Item 4A, act on liquor license for Anthology Incorporated, one-day charitable event, Thursday, November 10th, 108 West Main Street. Item 4B, act on liquor license for Big Brothers Big Sisters of Central Arizona, one-day charitable event, Saturday, October 22nd, 1924 West 8th Street. Item 4C, act on liquor license for Downtown Mesa Association, one-day civic event, Friday, October 28th, 1-99 West Main Street. Item 4D, act on liquor license for Downtown Mesa Association, two-day civic event, Friday, November 11th and Saturday, November 12th, North McDonald Street between Pepper Place and Main Street. Item 4E, act on liquor license for Knights of Columbus, All Saints Council 9485, one-day fraternal event, Saturday, November 5th, 1534 North Wrecker Road. Item 4F, act on liquor license for Casa Ramos, 1526 East Main Street. Item 4G, act on liquor license for China City Super Buffet, 6005 East Southern Avenue. Item 4H, act on liquor license for Tato Restaurant, 66 South Dobson Road. Item 4I, act on liquor license for National Kidney Foundation of Arizona, one-day charitable event, Saturday, October 29th, 922 South Country Club Drive. Item 5A, act on contract for crack seal material and application services for Transportation Department. Item 5B, act on contract for storm drain gates and manhole covers for Transportation Department. Item 5C, act on contract for traffic paint for Transportation Department. Item 5D, act to renew contract for ultra-thin bonded wearing course material and installation services for Transportation Department. Item 5E, act to renew contract for replacement playground equipment and parts for Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Department. Item 5F, act on contract to purchase network hardware and cabling materials for public safety training facility improvements. Item 5G has been removed from the agenda. Item 5H, act on contract for Fairway Gardens gas line and water line replacement. Funding is available in the fiscal year 11-12 water bond and gas bond capital programs. Item 6A, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute an agreement with the Governor's Office of Highway Safety to provide equipment to enhance selective traffic enforcement. Item 6B, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute an agreement with the Governor's Office of Highway Safety for overtime and equipment to enhance selective traffic enforcement. Item 6C, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute agreement with the Governor's Office of Highway Safety for overtime expenses to provide public awareness and educational activities to support traffic safety education. Item 6D, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute a grant agreement with the Arizona Criminal Justice Commission to accept grant funds for training, equipment, and overtime for the police department's forensic services section. Item 6E, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute a grant agreement with the Arizona Criminal Justice Commission to accept grant funds for training for the police department's forensic services section. Item 6F, act on resolution authorizing city manager to execute an intergovernmental agreement with the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community for receipt and distribution of grants from their Proposition 202 12% contribution program. Item 6G, Act on Resolution setting November 7th, 2011 as a public hearing date for continuation of the Mesa Town Center Improvement District Number 228. Item 8A, Introduction of Ordinance regarding Z11-17 for the 300 West through 100 East blocks of Main Street, located between 1st Street and 1st Avenue from Country Club Drive to McDonald, and located between 1st Street and 2nd Avenue from McDonald to Centennial Way, Serine. This request for a rezone will establish a downtown events overlay district along the Main Street corridor. Item 8B, Introduction of Ordinance regarding Z11-24, 1954 West Broadway, located on the northeast corner of Dobson Road and Broadway Road, request for council use permit to allow development of a pawn shop. Item 8C, Introduction of Ordinance amending Title 10, Chapter 4 of Mesa City Code to establish speed limits of 30 miles per hour on certain sections of Mesa Drive and Springwood Boulevard. Item 8D, Introduction of Ordinance amending Title 10, Chapter 10 of Mesa City Code to simplify the citation and court process for temporary traffic control violations and authorizing clarifications and corrections of the traffic barricade manual to be issued. And item 9A, Act on Ordinance, Z11-22, east and west of Dobson Road, along the 202 freeway south side for modification of a council use permit to allow for redesign of freeway landmark signs for Mesa Riverview Retail Center. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda.
Thank you very much. Is there any item that a council member would like to remove from the consent agenda? Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests from the public to remove any items?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, before we vote, I failed at the beginning of this meeting, although I did at the study session, to excuse Councilmember Chris Glover, who's unable to be with us tonight, won't be participating in the vote, so I apologize for forgetting to do that. I have a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Kavanaugh. Do I have a second? I have a second from the Vice Mayor. Any discussion? Please vote. The vote is 6 ayes, 0 nays, with Councilmember Glover absent. The motion carries. The next item on the agenda is item 3A. Discuss and take action on the appointment of John Pombier as Deputy City Manager. Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor and Council. As you know, several months ago, Mr. Jack Friedline retired from the City of Mesa, having served in the capacity as Deputy City Manager for quite some time. And as we sought to fill that position, we've gone through an extensive process, a review to find the most qualified and the candidate that would best fit working in our organization. We have done an extensive review. We had a headhunter do a significant call for resumes and applications from across the country, which were reviewed thoroughly. Those were narrowed down to 10 prospective candidates, all of which were then given an opportunity to be interviewed by two different panels of community members who recommended to myself, a group of four individuals to be interviewed in a process that we went through and included interviews with the city manager's office and with our department directors. And through that process, as we've been able to narrow down the selection, it became obvious to us in the final group that we actually had a very strong internal candidate who I would like to recommend to the council to fill the position of Deputy City Manager, and as Mr. John Pombier, who has served as the city's city prosecutor, and over the past, what is it now, John, 6 months?
9 months.
Nine, oh my gosh.
7 days.
Maybe he needs another 3 months to figure out. John's been working in the city manager's office, assisting in a variety of just different assignments. And has proven himself to be very capable and working on a variety of different projects across the organization, and has brought a really keen sense of understanding and being able to work and communicate well with our departments and resolving significant issues, preparing them for bringing items to the council that are well discussed and vetted through. And I think with that, as you all know, anybody who knows John, he also brings another level of energy into the room at all times. And he has been a great asset into the office. And it is my recommendation that John Pombia be appointed as Deputy City Manager.
Thank you. Vice Mayor?
Mr. Brady, what did you say Mr. Pombia's background was in?
I said he was formerly the city prosecutor, or is, I guess, well, currently the city prosecutor. So it's a two for one. I think
he's,
is that what you're asking?
Attorney?
He is an attorney by background, although he has
thinking?
Had a, excuse me?
What are you thinking, elevating an attorney into your office?
I figure
or in this case, bringing him down, because wasn't he on the 8th?
I'm always optimistic you can tame wild Mustangs, so that's kind of what our goal is here. No, I think, and that's unique. That's not necessarily the background that you would advertise for in a deputy city manager, but I do believe that that actually brings an interesting dimension, that the skills and the development of skills that are required to be an attorney are going to be advantageous. Sometimes they can be a disadvantage, but we'll get over that. And I think that he will bring, I think he brings a good understanding of being able to work and solve problems, and communication, I think, is key. Being able to communicate well between different areas has been a big asset in our department at this time.
Are you going to buy him a sports coat? Because he needs a haberdasher. It has been my, Mayor, it's been my privilege to work with Mr. Pombia these past 5 years, and particularly over the last, 9 months or so, he's been up doing special projects in the city manager's office. He's been a tremendous asset to me as I work on projects on the city council. So it came as little surprise that John received the nomination from the city manager, and I am privileged to, it looks like, make a second on the motion for his appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I made the motion to approve this appointment. I had the privilege of serving on a prior council that approved his appointment as city prosecutor, and it was clear at that time that he had great skill sets as a prosecutor, particularly working in all the difficult fields that we see in municipal court. And John has a great reputation with his staff and in the legal community. And he was also integral in the planning of our new municipal courts building because of the prosecutorial function that occurs there, and that's not an easy task. And I, too, have had the privilege of working much more closely with him over the past several months, and I think this is proof that lawyers can achieve redemption by moving into different areas of public service. But he clearly is a go-to guy who is takes the approach of how can I make this issue work rather than throwing barriers up. And that's a great kind of attitude and is reflective of how our city staff functions in general. So I think he'll provide great leadership and great interaction with council and city departments. And so I move for his appointment.
Thank you very much. Any other comments? You know, one of the things that I've been very interesting for me to observe since I took office, and having come from owning businesses and also a corporate, I hired a lot of people. And so I was very interested in the process that our city manager, Chris Brady, follows when we fill these positions. So I've had the privilege of watching several high-level positions be filled, from our chief of police, Frank Milstead, to Mark Hirschberg, you just saw, to Director Cindy Ornstein, to now the deputy city manager. And one thing that really interests me is when Chris says that these candidates go through and are narrowed down to 10, what he doesn't tell you is that Chris never sees, nor does he even look at resumes, until they have gone through an extensive review process. And he stays far away from it. So, and then he uses the comments that he gets back from those reviews when he finally meets the final group of four to better understand and get to know the candidates. And I found that very interesting because it's a process that's exhaustive. It's a process that not only accepts but that welcomes and really is set up to gather a wide variety of responses from a wide variety of people. And in each of the cases, I've seen the process work. So that's why I was so surprised when John Pombia... No, I'm just kidding.
He had been doing so well.
He was. So that's why it was very, very gratifying to me to know that one of our own had made it through, because this is not a Chris Brady or anyone else putting the names up and just saying, gee, we'll work them through to the final and see how it plays out. That's not how the process works. That's not how our system works. And yet the fact that John survived that system in the face of some very stiff competition. I mean, we had current city managers and former city managers on those lists, and he went through and outshone them all. So congratulations, John. I've seen that I trust that process, because it has brought us, I believe, some of the very, very top managers and department heads and others that I can see. I'm very proud to claim them as part of our team, because they're just incredible. So process I respect, and gotten to work with John on very many issues, and so I think it's a great choice. So congratulations, John. Wait, yeah, we haven't voted yet. don't want to jinx you. So thank you very much. So we have a motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, a second from the Vice Mayor. There's no further comments or questions. Please vote. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative, with Councilmember Glover absent, and the motion carries. And now I can congratulate you. The next items on the agenda are item 7. Now, how we're going to handle these, there are actually four items that relate to the Chicago Cubs spring training facility. And how I propose that we handle these is we're going to take item 7A and handle that by itself, because that's the approval of a selection of a contractor for the facility, and an authorization to enter into the design phase. It's to approve Hunt Construction Group as a construction manager at risk contractor, authorize City Manager Chris Brady to enter the design phase services contract with Hunt in the amount of $380,000. So we'll take that first of all, and then we are going to take items 7B, 7C, and 7D, which all relate to agreements with the specific Cubs. And we will we'll handle those as a single item and take a single vote on those. So, Mr. Brady, you want to give us an overview of, first of all, 7A, and explain to us the process that went through to select Hunt as the construction manager at risk?
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and Council, this was, again, a very fairly exhaustive process also that we took part in to select the construction manager at risk. As the Council may recall, one of the decisions we made early on in the process as we were meeting with the Cubs is we developed what we refer to as the project team. The project team is the group that comes together to make the major decisions regarding both the agreements and ultimately on the first phase, it really was the beginning, the selection of both the design architect group as well as the contractor, which is the item you have before you. The project team was made up of myself, the city engineer, Mark Hirschberg from the city, representatives from the Cubs, included Mark McGuire, Mr. Todd Ricketts, and Steve Jacobson. Thank you. I was going to say another name, and I know it wasn't right. So there were three representatives from both the city and the Cubs on the project team. The project team, all members, from both sides, were equally part of both the defining the request for proposals that went out for the selection of the construction manager at risk. That was reviewed by both parties. The scope and the expectations were well defined. After a national solicitation for qualified proposals, we narrowed that selection down to a handful. I believe it was either five or six. Ross, four proposals came in. We actually had them make presentations to the project team. So each of the four applicants or proposers were to set up and made formal presentations to the project team throughout a day. We actually moved from room to room and met with each of the groups. We had some very incredible presentations. There was a lot of competition for this work. This is a significant dollar amount, it also is a national project that's been getting a lot of national attention. So we were able to really have the best of the best who are competing for this project. As we interviewed and scored each one of the projects, we came together to compare our scores and the comments we had. And it was a pretty tough competition, but at the end, we as a group, I think it was unanimous as far as the top score was for Hunt Construction. And I'll share with you some of the impressions that I think carry the day for Hunt Construction. First of all, Hunt is a local firm. They are here locally. They are, as they put it, this project is being built in their backyard, and they very much wanted to be part of it. That's important, that local participation. The second part was, though, they're busy across the country building projects and have been building sports facilities, spring training facilities, and other facilities across the country, which are very similar to the one that we are looking at building here in Mesa. So that experience, really, I think Hunt Construction, is easy to say they are probably the premier contractor for these size of facilities across the country, and certainly that was significant. I think their presentation at the end of the day, and there are representatives here from Hunt who are part of that presentation, and they did a very fine job of explaining to us their expertise and the personnel that would be assigned. But I'll tell you what carried the day, Bob probably can attest to this because it was, you could tell the representatives from Hunt were a little nervous in their presentation because Mr. Robert Hunt was in the presentation. And that was somewhat unusual. The owner of the company was there, and he made a personal commitment to make sure this project would be done on time and under budget. And so I will tell you, there's nothing like being able to shake the hand and look the guy in the eye who owns the company to make sure he's going to deliver the project. So the project team, as we deliberated and scored, I think those were some of the highlights of the project. And I'll add to it, as I mentioned, Hunt's commitment, or the fact that they are here, a local company, the other part that I think they significantly stepped out on is they really made a strong commitment in a program to make sure that local subcontractors would be engaged in this project. They provided a significant outreach program that I think was impressive, and we look forward to continuing working with Hunt Construction on making sure that as much of the work as possible will go to local firms in Mesa, in the surrounding area, so we can return those dollars back into our economy. And they've made a certain commitment to that, and they have a plan that's been well developed out for that commitment. So the project team, Mayor, again, made of the individuals I suggested, the three from the city, the three from the Cubs, this is their recommendation to move forward with the design phase of the Hunt Construction contract.
Thank you very much. We have several people who have requested to speak on this, and I don't know if, we'll get to those later, because I don't know if they want to speak specifically on this one, but we do. I do know that Mr. Tom Schulke would like to speak on this 7A, Mr. Schulke. And as always, Mr. Schulke, you have 3 minutes. Please restate your name and address for the record.
Tom Schulke, Sony 604 East Wolf Canyon. I ask that you continue this item and the following three items to a later meeting. I have repeatedly asked for sufficient time for the public to review the hundreds of pages of documents connected with these items. Many of the most important items were not available until several days ago. The city staff members designated as key contacts were gone for part or all of the past week. Some of the data references and the agreements are not yet available on the city's website. Financial projections needed to analyze this fiscal impact of the city have not been made available despite repeated requests. If you do not continue the item, I would appreciate hearing why my repeated request for sufficient time to allow the public to read, study, and ask questions on the hundreds of pages of materials is being denied. The city charter, section 609A, states it is the general intent that open competitive bidding be followed in the purchase of material supplies, commodities, equipment, insurance, and capital improvements whenever possible. Here we have Hunt being selected and a fee negotiated. A competitive bid is not being used. Why was the selection of Hunt and the fee not done via competitive bid? Hunt Construction was a major contributor to the Yes on 420 campaign. The staff report indicates the Cubs were involved in the selection of Hunt. What assurances can you give the people of Mesa that public funds are being spent on this no-bid contract under terms that represent the best value for Mesa? Many citizens may suspect this contract is payback to Hunt for the Prop 420 contribution. A majority of this council has taken campaign contributions from individuals indicating they are Hunt Construction executive. I ask those council members who have taken such contributions to identify themselves, the amount they have accepted, identify any action they have taken to promote Hunt, and explain why they feel they do not have to declare a conflict of interest on this item. The selection of Hunt for this contract has been done in violation of the intent of the city charter, has resulted in the selection of a contractor who made a major donation to the Prop 420 campaign with the apparent involvement of the Cubs, and is now being voted upon by the council, the majority of which has taken campaign contributions from Hunt executives. This is a very poor start towards gaining public trust for the Cubs stadium development process you are pursuing at this meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Brady, did any of the other, was there any protest or anything other filed by any of the other applicants? Or
none.
None. Okay. How many other stadiums has Hunt built?
Oh, my goodness.
Lost count. Okay.
It's several.
Okay.
Over 100.
All righty. We have other people who are, I don't know if you specifically want to speak to this matter, want to wait for item 7B, C, and D. Okay. Mark Yarborough.
Mayor Smith, ladies and gentlemen of the council, good evening. My name is Mark Yarborough. I reside at 2427 South Spruce Street in Mesa. Just wanted to step forward. Hunt Construction, I've worked with a lot with the Little Leagues. Been a league president for, I've lost track, more than a decade involved in Little League. I'm currently the administrator in Mesa. Even before the whole campaign and the idea of building a Cubs stadium, Hunt Construction has always given back to the community, given back to the Little Leagues, donated funding. They're a true local contractor, and I felt I should be here to at least support them. I can't think of anybody better that would be chosen to build that stadium. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yarborough. Councilmember Summers, or Vice Mayor Summers, I apologize.
Same old. Mr. Brady, on the question of CMAR, construction manager at risk, versus the process that many people are familiar with, which is design, I hope I got it right, design, bid, build?
Correct.
Can you give us a brief summary of the two and why the city of Mesa goes with CMAR and even the state goes with CMAR?
Sure. And Ross, come up, you can help me out. One of the reasons we chose to go with the construction manager at risk, which is allowed for under state law 38, because we really felt like this would provide a significant assistance to this project. And one of the differences is, and Ross can expound if I miss any of the significant ones, one of the reasons we chose Hunt was not on a bid dollar amount that is maybe being suggested. We picked them on their merits and their professional services, and then negotiated a fee. And what that's allowed us to do is on the CMAR, we literally have the contractor on board right now today in our discussions with the design team. Versus a design build, typically the contractor may not be selected till significant portion of the design work has been completed. We're already seeing the advantages of having the contractor sitting at the table with the design team. We had already had a preliminary meeting last week where we had the major principal parties represented by the city and the Cubs in a room as we began kind of outlining the master plan, the concept plans for the project. And sitting at the table was not only the design team populace, but also the contractor involved. And already, they were already, as we were talking about different concepts on this site related to utilities, related to the siting of streets, the stadium, the size and the shape, they bring their experience from other projects that they can readily interject early on in the process so that we can either consider different options that we may not be aware of, and it may be more expensive if we had designed it first and then come back and told the contractor, well, this is the way you have to do it. Since we've already invested 6-9 months in design, you have to build it this way. They can contribute today already with their input about maybe better ways, different materials, different approaches, the timing of construction and when it needs to begin and end. So we really think that this methodology for a project like this, that is, while it is defined, it still has a lot of kind of unknowns as we've tried to work through the site development. So I don't know, the biggest difference for us is having the contractor day one sitting at the table versus waiting until 6 or 9 months of design work before they're brought on, and then having them to have to bid the work that's already been designed. And so that's one of the benefits. And Ross, is there maybe some other items you want to add to the differences there?
Well, you know, just Hunt intends to not self-perform any of this work. They're going to bid all the work. The design phase that the gentleman was talking about earlier is just the negotiated price for the design phase. But when we get into construction, they're going to bid all the trades, and we're going to be able to pre-approve all the subcontractors that bid those trades. So we're kind of getting the advantage of a low bid type contract, but we selected Hunt, we get to pre-approve all the subs, which I would hope that we'd end up with a better quality workforce, and it all will be low bid. And basically, we need to negotiate a fee for Hunt to manage the project. And basically, they're going to be our construction manager managing these subcontractors.
Thank you.
Does any of this, whether by going with CMAR, put the city at risk of going over the $84 million for the project plus the $15 million that were approved by the voters?
No.
The end of the question is, by approved by the board, is for this particular project.
No. Each one of those, the $84 million that is discussed in the development agreement, is capped for certain portions of the project, whether it's the baseball facilities and the stadium, and there's a list of items that it cannot exceed, and the contractor understands that. The $15 million is also capped for other elements related to infrastructure and parking. Really, the other part of this is both the Cubs and the city will push the contractor very hard to drive to stay away from that number as much as possible while delivering the project, for the reason that any additional dollars that are not spent up, including within the 84, will be set aside to help us with capital replacement projects in the future. So there's an incentive, and there's a built-in incentive for the contractor too to bring their project in. At different phases in the project, one of the advantages of this process is we'll start getting the programming, and the contractor will start giving us estimates, and ultimately they'll give us guaranteed maximum prices on the project. So we will have a maximum amount that will be spent to deliver the project, and that will help us understand quickly any amount of value engineering that needs to be done, and making sure that it fits within the budget. Anything over the $84 million, if that not certainly is available, if the project team chooses to exceed the $84 million, the project could do that. The difference is that the city's obligation is limited to the $84 million, and anything above that, then the Cubs would cover that expense.
Okay. Which means the Cubs have a real incentive to keep this.
Yes.
Any other comments on this? I would say I come from this industry and built no stadiums, but a lot of construction. I can tell you that having the contractor in early on actually saves a lot of money. I mean, a lot of people think that if you design something, go out for the lowest bid, that is the lowest cost. No, it's the lowest bid. And what I found is, while I love architects and engineers, if they don't have any control or anyone who's actually going to build the building involved, they'll design a very functional building that it may not be the most efficient way to build and therefore the cheapest way to build. And I know on several houses that I designed and built, we always had the contractors in, because just on where you put a wall or how you did your mechanical could save thousands and thousands of dollars, and that's not how architects think. And so having both the architects and the contractor at the table at the same time from the beginning, I think is the most efficient, most cost efficient, and will result in the best stadium for the lowest price. I'm especially glad to hear that they are going out to bid on these issues, and therefore we're going to get, as you said, the benefit of both. Okay. Thank you. All right, I'll entertain motions on item 7A. We have a motion from Councilmember Finter, a second from Councilmember Higgins. Is there any other questions or comments? Please vote. The vote is 6-0 in the affirmative. Motion 7A is approved. We'll now move on to items 7B, C, or ND. Item 7, which will be handled as a single issue and a single vote. Item 7B is approving and authorizing the city manager to execute a development agreement for the spring training facilities between the City of Mesa and the Chicago Cubs Baseball Club, LLC. Item 7C is approving and authorizing the city manager to execute the facilities use agreement for the spring training facilities between the City of Mesa and the Chicago Cubs Baseball, LLC. And 7D is approving and authorizing the city manager to execute an option agreement between the City of Mesa and Mesa Development Holdings, LLC. Mr. Brady, you want to give us a summary?
Yes, Mayor, thank you. Mayor and Council, so you have in front of you, as we've previously discussed, three different agreements, and let me just kind of highlight each one of the agreements and what's contained within them. The first one is what we refer to as the development agreement. This provides for the construction and development of the site, and the limitations are the different elements that will be completed as part of the development agreement. As we just previously mentioned, the city will pay up to $84 million for the construction of certain items, including the stadium, the team facilities, the city fields, some of the public street improvements, some of the parking, and so that includes some of the on-site utility infrastructure. That number is capped. It's defined within the development agreement, those items that are applied to the $84 million. And again, as I said, if the project team chooses to expend more than the $84 million for those items, those improvements, then the Cubs would be responsible for covering that cost. In addition to the $84 million, the city has identified amount not to exceed $15 million for the public parking, which will contain a minimum of 2,500 parking spaces, which will serve during game days, as well as off-site utility and electric infrastructure, and then the public improvements around the site, as well as the $15 million will also serve to help us replace some of the park amenities that will be displaced as part of the improvements to the lake in order for it to serve as the irrigation storage facilities for the site. So the development agreement, again, once it relates mostly to the construction and development of the site and outlining the terms under which that will take place. The next item is what we refer to as the facilities use agreement. And this lays out the conditions upon which Mesa will then lease the spring training facilities back to the Cubs. Most of that relates to the term of the lease, which allows for an initial 30-year lease, and then with an option to extend that up to 50 years. It includes the terms for the amount that the lease will be, what the amount of lease that will be paid for the facilities, and it outlines the use of the facilities, who's responsible for the maintenance and operations. The Cubs will now take on the maintenance and operations of these facilities for the ones in which they use, the stadium and the spring training, their clubhouse and their facilities. The city will maintain responsibility for the four public fields, which we refer to as the city fields in the project. It defines the responsibility for collecting the revenues for tickets and concessions, the outlines responsibilities for future capital improvements. Today, the city is fully responsible for providing all capital improvements and repairs at the facility. The city will now share in the larger capital improvements that extend the life of the facility. Those will be made at specific defined times during the term of the agreement. Every year, the 10th, the 20th, the 25th year, those will have opportunity for that will be the time when the city will come in and make improvements to the facility. Again, that's facilities use agreement. It's almost, if you would think of it as the rental agreement for the facilities, and outlines those specific terms. The option agreement is the third agreement, and that really relates to the opportunity for private development to take place on the site. As the council knows, this site was selected so that it would achieve two results. One, it would provide for sufficient space to accommodate the new stadium and the practice fields and the different spring training facilities, but also provide for an opportunity for private development to come and be part of this larger development. The option agreement then therefore addresses the acquisition of city property for private development. We have defined that there is an option agreement of which the Cubs will pay an initial $25,000 to develop to develop 3 acres of property west of Riverview Drive. That will be allow for them. It's really kind of a performance-based option agreement that allows them a period of time to perform the option, which means to purchase property and to develop property, which is our goal, to see more private development take place. That option agreement is the initial term, or the initial phase of the option agreement expects that the Cubs will do one of two things before spring training, the first spring training day, opening day of spring training. They'll either develop out sufficient space for a restaurant commercial facility within the stadium by the opening day of spring training, or they will have developed out 10,000 square feet of commercial space in an area that, again, designated west of the Riverview Drive. If any one of those two are accomplished, then the option agreement continues for another 18 months. And the Cubs are allowed to extend the option agreement for a period of 18 months if they are successful in developing 10,000 acres of commercial retail space during that period of time. At this time, the development east of Riverview Drive is not available because that land is continued to be encumbered by a federal restriction for use for parkland only. We are moving forward and working cooperatively with the federal government, as we have done with other parts of this site, to identify other property that can be designated as parkland throughout the city. And at that time, when that encumbrance is removed, the Cubs will then be paying another $25,000 to exercise an option agreement on 3 acres of land east of Riverview Drive. How do I do, Debbie? I get most of it. So those are the major terms of the agreement. And it may sound complicated. In some ways, it's fairly simple. It really just requires the developer, the Cubs, to perform and execute a plan of purchasing property and developing property. If they're successful in doing that, they will be able to continue the option agreement for some period of time, these 18-month intervals. If, however, they're not able to do that, the option will terminate, and therefore allowing the city to negotiate with other parties to come and serve the role as a developer for the site. It also would not preclude, if the termination of the option agreement terminates, that at a later time the Cubs decide that they are then available to come in develop the property. They could do that, but obviously that would be on different terms and different price points. But the idea is to encourage and incentivize development of the private property, or the land that would be available for private development on the site.
And I think that to repeat, that this option agreement is for this time and this place with this party. If they don't live up to that, then this doesn't apply to any other party or any developer that could come in. That would then be a whatever the time, place, and objectives are at that time, we would then pursue development. The idea is we want development there.
Right.
Okay. Once again, we have Mr. Schulke, who would like to speak on these. And Mr. Schulke, I know you told me before the meeting that you had prepared remarks on each of the items separately. I'm going to give you a little leeway and let you stand up here and give those remarks. So go right ahead. Okay.
Tom Schulke, 7604 East Wolf Canyon. It is hard to view this agreement as anything but heavily favoring the Cubs. Cubs get revenue from ticket sales, sign rentals, naming rights, retail development, almost all the parking. Mesa gets very little revenue. When it comes to expenses, the reverse is true. I would like to comment on one defense I keep hearing of the new agreement. People are quick to point out any expense that the Cubs will pay at the new stadium that they do not pay at Hohokam. If you are burdened by a contract that's losing $1,000 a year over 30 years, it is definitely not an improvement to enter in a new contract because you're only going to lose $500 a year over the next 30 years. The proper course of action is to let the first contract expire and not enter in a second contract. It's a curious claim that a new contract is desirable because it will lose less money than under a previous contract. I would love to have been able to go through the numbers and show the effect this is going to have on the city, but they're just not available, and they're not any in the documents. They're not available from staff, and that once again, I ask you to continue this item so the public has a chance to go through them. Regarding the facilities use agreement, rents are set at levels to provide property owners a return on their investment in buildings and land. The rent of this property is designed to provide a return of the land investment only. The city's investment in the stadium is not compensated by the Cubs. Based on the fact sheet presented before the election, I assume the Cubs would donate the land and pay rent towards the facility in an amount reduced by bed tax collections. A few days ago, I learned the Cubs' rent was calculated in an amount to cover the land cost only. Voters had no hint such would be the case when they voted. Since the fact that the Cubs would pay an unusually low rent was not clearly explained to voters, the council should refer the FUA to voters. Rent under these terms is clearly a gift to the Cubs, and that is subject to court challenge as violating the gift clause. Voters were told in numerous yes on 420 flyers that a yes vote would keep the Cubs in Mesa for 30 more years. The contract you're about to vote on allows the Cubs to leave after 25 years by paying an early termination fee. Hold the Cubs to the promises made to the voters. I ask the Cubs to live up to the promise made to the voters and agree to the change. If the Cubs do not agree to eliminate the early termination clause, I ask that the council refer the FUA to the voters. If terms have changed from what voters were promised, they should be allowed to change their vote. Section 2.0 of the FUA prohibits a second team from using the new stadium. A number of Valley stadiums host two Cactus League teams. Why did the city agree to this wording? Ask yourselves why the Cubs would want to limit the stadium to one team. Wrigleyville West would be much more profitable if two teams shared the stadium. The Cubs should insist upon sharing the stadium with another Cactus League team. If the Cubs truly intend to build Wrigleyville West, they should insist that other teams be found for the new stadium before any teams are signed up for Hohokam. I ask the Cubs why they oppose a second Cactus League team at the new stadium. The legislation the city tried to get through the state legislature to fund the stadium included a ticket surcharge for users of the stadium. Such a surcharge is prohibited under point 6.1D of the FUA. Mesa gets little revenue under the agreement, not even construction taxes, development fees, or property taxes. The FUA, as it stands, will drain the city's finances. The ticket surcharge is a fair way to raise revenue. It is certainly much fairer than levying an increased bed tax on people who visit Mesa and never go to the stadium. I asked the Cubs why they oppose a ticket surcharge. I'm sure stadium visitors will understand Mesa's need to recoup some of its costs. I ask you to include a surcharge in the agreement. Regarding the option agreement, the option agreement is the worst of the documents presented tonight. My chief complaint is the agreement substantially undervalues the 2 3-acre parcels. At the September 22nd study, the city manager indicated to you that the $9 per square foot valuation was based on the land as it sits today without improvements and the stadium. Selling the 6 acres at this low price when you plan to spend $99 million on the adjacent site makes no sense. Developers often include an expensive attraction in their development that allows them to sell adjacent land at higher prices. Mesa should be doing the same. MDH will benefit from high pedestrian traffic, landscape grounds and amenities, ample nearby parking, and generous zoning. Mesa is setting a price for the land based on an appraisal that does not contemplate improvements you are authorizing tonight. Simply put, Mesa is getting ripped off on the price of the option land. Mesa residents are being asked to subsidize the billionaire Cubs owners. I'm sure the Goldwater Institute is looking at these agreements. Given the low purchase price, how can the agreement be viewed as not violating the gift clause? I have not had time to determine what happens to the multiple agreements if one of them is invalidated by the courts. I urge you and the Cubs to make sure you're clear as to what happens should one part of the documents be altered by a court. Voters were promised by the Yes on 420 campaign that Wrigleyville West would be built. This agreement represents a substantial reduction in that promise in terms of both timing and certitude of construction. Based on this and the extremely low price for the 6 acres, I ask that the option agreement be referred to voters if you pass it. I'm sure the Cubs are telling you they are fully committed to Wrigleyville West. They can show their commitment by agreeing to pay the full purchase price as the option price under the agreement. The present contract calls for a paltry $25,000 option price for each parcel. Such a low option price affords little protection to Mesa should conditions worsen after Mesa commits to spending $99 million. If the Cubs are unwilling to raise the option price to the full purchase price, you should question whether they are truly committed to Wrigleyville West. What happens if the owners of MDH decide to sell their partnership interest to another entity for a quick profit, to an entity Mesa would rather not do business with? Is there language to protect Mesa from a change of control of MDH in the agreement? I asked staff about this and was referred to Section 12.7 of the agreement. As I see it, 12.7 prohibits MDH from transferring rights under the agreement but does not prohibit control changes within MDH. Finally, I ask that the identities of all MDH partners be made public. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Schilke. We have several people who have requested to speak. First one is Peter Sterling.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Peter Sterling. I'm the President and CEO of the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, 120 North Center, right up the street. Just as my predecessors, my Chamber of Commerce predecessors did in the early 1950s, I stand before the council tonight in support of these items before you, which gets us closer to realizing a fantastic spring training complex in the Riverview area. Mesa will soon be home to the spring training crown jewel of the Cactus League and perhaps of the Pac-12 baseball, but that's another story. First of all, we endorse the selection of Hunt Construction. That is a member of the Mesa Chamber of Commerce, and we believe them when they talk about the local commitment, and we look forward to working with them in involving our other chamber members in the construction of the stadium and complex. You know, when the Cubs first came to Mesa in the early 1950s, it took a civic investment. The Chamber of Commerce at that time gladly took part. That investment paid off in spades, as will this one. With the development agreement the city has negotiated, we know to expect this coming investment to pay many returns over the coming decades. We know that many of our, I spent some time in the Riverview area this past weekend and spoke to members. They're very excited because they know what that means to them and subsequent sales tax receipts. The Chamber records its support for these items and looks forward to helping Mesa businesses join in the success of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sterling. Next, we'll hear again from Mr. Mark Yarbrough.
Good evening again. Mark Yarbrough, 2427 South Spruce Street. In reading the documents, which they are, granted, very large, very drawn out, but I can tell you, nothing's different from what the city came out and said during the campaign when voters overwhelmingly supported this project. The idea is to create this Disneyland-type area, and that's exactly what these agreements are going forward. In terms of the options agreement, I think that was extremely well talked about and negotiated. It holds the Cubs' feet to the fire. They can't just say, we're going to hold on to this land forever and never develop it. They got 18 months. If they don't develop it, somebody else is going to come in and develop them for themselves, some entrepreneur. But given the fact that the Cubs have been with Mesa for 50-plus years, this has been their home for spring training, they're not going to go anywhere. They have the vision, they're putting the money in place, and they're going to create something that's truly an asset to the state of Arizona and probably to the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Mr. Bud Page.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and City Council members, and Dina.
Wow.
I called her Diana the other day, so she got mad at me. So anyhow, Bud Page, 5830 East McKellips Road, Unit 150, Mesa, Arizona, a native of Mesa, Arizona. At present, I am the Chief Big Ho, which is kind of like the president of the Mesa Ho Cams, a membership of around 197 members that have helped to support the spring training since 1952, when Dwight Patterson decided he wanted to bring spring training and baseball to Mesa, Arizona. We have in the past supported around $198,000 in gifts to Mesa Sports Youth Activities, as well as the United Way, with funds that's derived from spring training at Ho Camp Park. 197 of the members support the new stadium at Riverview, as well as Wrigleyville, as well as any other activities that come out there. I just wanted to be here to say thank you to the mayor, the city council, for your expertise in drafting the instruments that you have, and look forward to a new spring training facility and Wrigleyville in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Page. Is there anyone, Ms. Crocker, is anyone else asked to speak on this issue?
Weather request, Mayor.
Okay. I will entertain a motion on items 7A, B, 7C, and 7D. We have a motion to approve those items from Councilmember Richens. Do I have a second? We have a second from Councilmember Finter. We have, first of all, Vice Mayor Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a bit of a mea culpa on this one, with apologies mostly to Dennis. I'm not a baseball fan, and I don't go to baseball games. And the last time I went to a spring training game, other than being on council, was when my wife wasn't my wife, and she's a big Milwaukee Brewers fan, and they used to play in Chandler. By the way, Dennis, she's really ticked at your team. So in some respects, and I don't want to speak for Mr. Schulke, but I think with Mr. Schulke and others, there's an underlying sense that they really don't feel that this is a proper use of taxpayer revenue for a stadium. And I got to be honest, I agree in some sense. The difference is, in this particular case, that the voters had a mandate. We went to them and asked them if this is something that they wanted to spend their money on. And overwhelmingly, by a 2-to-1 margin, they said yes. They said yes to two things. One, we want baseball to be, particularly spring training, and especially the Cubs, to continue to be an integral part of this community. And the second thing they said, but we don't want to spend more than $84 million for it and $15 million for infrastructure. That was very clear. The details of that they left to the council and to our very capable staff. It's tough to negotiate these deals, and I appreciate the comments about our expertise, but I will also admit that I'm not an expert at this. The mayor is much better at making these deals than I am, and has put some fantastic leadership toward it. But I have had the opportunity to deal with the Cubs, and I can tell you that I feel we got absolutely the best deal out of this that we possibly could. It has been, as much of it is part of a public discussion now for better part of a year. The documents have been out for 10 days or more. Other documents had been released prior to that. And you still have the opportunity to review those documents. If you review them and you absolutely hate them, I'm not sending this to a referendum. I think the voters have spoke, and I have heard repeatedly from Mr. Brady and staff and you, Mayor, that this project will not go over the voter mandate, $84 million plus 15.
and that's what I will defend. But if you don't like this deal, you can collect signatures and vote on it again. City Attorney, would you? Is that true? Before I make that statement,
Vice Mayor, I'm already seeing some question on the council about that question. Typically, development agreements would be subject to a referendum, and if there is a belief that this does not meet the intent of the prior vote, the voters could vote to change the project. But it has already been voted on once by the voters. In my opinion, this development agreement and the facilities use agreement is very consistent with the MOU that was passed by this council in January of 2010 and also approved by the voters in November. But certainly petitions could be taken out. Petitions can be taken out on any act of the council.
Thank you. And that's what I'm confident in as well. And the fact is, I think that people are going to be pretty confident with the deal that they've been rating. So, though I will probably not be going to the Chicago Cubs games or any other games after I leave office, I think the will of the voters has been put forward. I think we've done the best job we possibly can, and so I will support this, Mayor.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Councilmember Higgins?
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to make a couple comments. There's been some comments on how long the documents have been available. Some of the documents have been available for well over a year. It's just that in the last 2 weeks they've been packaged as a package so you can easily find them. And I think Mr. Yarborough really said it correctly when he said nothing has changed intent-wise from the original package we put forward for the Yes on 420 campaign. So I'm quite confident with what we've put together, and I'm fully supportive of the hard work that Ms. Debbie Spinner and her team has put together. We really appreciate you all your sleepless mornings. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Finter.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted Mr. Schulke and others to know I don't think I'll ever be accused of being the person that jumped on the bandwagon originally when this Cubs process came through, and I've actually been quite a contrarian as we've gone through this process. A little insight is as we've had e-sessions and meetings and things, I can tell you that there's been spirited discussion, and it has been the stuffing has been knocked out of this in many times, and I can tell you, first of all, you kind of threw up on 7A. I've taken no contributions from the Cubs. I've never been contacted. I think someone keeps looking around the room, and I'm asking, is anybody here? I wouldn't know these folks if I walked by them on the street. So I think I can give you a fair look at this without undue influence and be able to tell you that there's been a tremendous amount of effort over these 2 years as we've gone through these processes, and even line by line at times. And I can look you in the eyes, and I can look the folks in District 2 and say, I think we have actually a pretty good product at the end of this. It wasn't pretty, and it wasn't fun to go through, but I think the end result is very positive. I want you to know, I seldom take this opportunity, but our good mayor spent months fighting through issues that the council brought forth in these executive sessions, fighting for the citizens of Mesa and the other side. And I can also stand that the city manager and our city attorney and her staff and the tremendous amount of work that went through, by no means was this a walk in the park for anybody, and I don't feel like the citizens of Mesa have been sold out on this. I can tell you, if I thought there was corruption or undue influence, I would be railing on this thing. I wouldn't be shy about it at all. So I'm supportive of the of 7A, obviously, of the vote and these other choices. I've looked at those documents. Sure, after the fact, I could go through and say, man, I wish they had done this or I wish they did this. But from my perspective, being in the middle of this, in the trenches, fighting through some of these issues, I think we have a good product at the end, and I'll be able to go out to the voters that I represent and be able to tell them I think this is a solid deal. And so, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilman Finter. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Those of you who know me know I'm a rabid St. Louis baseball Cardinal fan, and when it comes to anything regarding the Cubs, I give it very close scrutiny. and and the Cubs know that as well. And I've been through this process before with that other Cardinal team in the Valley, and negotiating stadium agreements is a challenging process at best. And I think we've also learned from the experience from all the other Valley communities in the explosion and expansion of sports facilities over the past 10 years about the good and the bad and the ugly. And what I think we have here is a plan that provides solid protection for the investment by the residents of our community in this enterprise. And it has not been an easy process. And Chris Brady and the mayor and the city attorney's office have all been champion advocates in the difficult task of negotiating the nuts and bolts of the agreement. But I believe what we're voting on tonight is consistent with what Mesa voters approved. I think it contains protections for the community. I think it provides a template for a solid investment in our community that will have a great rate of return. And while I haven't received any campaign money from Hunt, I have been in the stadiums that they've built around the country, including my hometown of St. Louis. And I know they do a quality project, which they will here as well. But I don't believe this violates the gift clause. I think our attorneys have done a very good job. And again, I've been through this process, and it's not an easy one. And the product of the process, what we have here, is carefully crafted with an intent to benefit our community. And I think it will result in a solid partnership for decades to come for the community. So I will be supporting it.
Thank you, Mayor Kavanaugh. You know, like most long efforts, you get to the end where you're actually dealing with the end product, and it's very anticlimactic. And I can tell you, this is another major milestone in a long process. But nothing that is worthwhile comes easy. And there have been almost now 11 months of negotiations with the Chicago Cubs on and off, but for several months, very, very heated isn't the right word, but intense negotiations. And there was one purpose in those negotiations, and one reason why I think it took so long. First of all, this is a complex project. And when you look at what we want to accomplish there, we're very demanding as to where we want to end up at the end of the day. And we push for that. But the second thing was, primarily, we really wanted to ensure that what we presented to the voters was lived up to. I have been through the details of this agreement with the Cubs on many different occasions, and I can tell you that I feel absolutely confident that what we presented and what I personally presented on many occasions to voters is followed in the final agreement. And I guess we can quibble about this section or that section, and certainly there are many sections that are the result of compromise between individual issues, but we never compromised on the overriding principles, and we never compromised on very basic details, such as hard caps, what we were going to build, and what we wanted to accomplish. And those things the city held steady. I think a lot of the arguments we're hearing now are rehashes of arguments that were made during the campaign. There are restatements of issues, and, for example, the numbers. We've had a study that we're using that's been there for going on 15, 16 months, or almost a year and a half. Did not deviate from that. We talked about the basics of the economics of the deal, and those basics have been followed. I think that when you compare this agreement to any other agreement in the Cactus League, this not only stacks up, I believe this is by far the fairest agreement for the city and the taxpayers of Mesa of any spring training facility agreement in this valley. And I've looked at many of them, believe me. Had many of them thrown on front of us saying, we would like this. And we said, no, that doesn't comport, does not agree with the MOU and with the agreement we had. The next thing I'd like to say is that you know, sometimes we look at this as building a stadium for a bunch of rich owners and a rich players. And I guess that's one way you could look at it. And I think that I was really enlightened one time when I was at one of the many community events during the campaign, and a gentleman stood up and he said, "You know, I'm really tired of hearing about how we're building a stadium for these players. These players can find gobs of places to play. I look at it as we're building this for us, for tens of thousands of people, nearly 200,000 people a year, that we have an opportunity to go watch and to enjoy. This is a community asset. Baseball players will find a place to play. Rich people will find a place to play. I want a place where I can take my family and where I can enjoy this without out-of-town guests and things like that." I mean, put it in that perspective, this is like many other things we do in the city. We invest in things that are amenities for our residents, our guests, and in this case, that also drive an economic program that the citizens of Mesa decided long ago in the early 50s. They repeated that commitment to spring training in the mid-70s when the first Ho-O-Com was built. They repeated that commitment in the mid-90s when the second Ho-O-Com was built, and they voted overwhelmingly, as the vice mayor said, by a 2-to-1 margin to renew that commitment to spring training as part of our community, as part of the economics of our community, as part of the amenities in our community, as part of the experience of the community. Our voters have stated this is truly the heart and soul of part of the heart and soul of Mesa. And so this is important to our community. If they didn't believe that, they wouldn't have voted like they voted. And so I'm grateful to the efforts of city staff that they, for all the time they put in, for the commitment they have put in. This gets us to the next stage. Hopefully this is the launching pad of something that'll really be exciting as we go through with the plans, and then hopefully sometime early next year, maybe in the spring of next year, we break ground on a stadium and we start moving a lot of dirt. And while it will be it certainly is difficult to have change, and watching the Riverview golf course and park be changed is difficult for a lot of people. I get that. I understand that. But I think at the end of the day, when we open up this facility and we see how we'll enter, how the citizens of Mesa and our guests will be able to enjoy what is created, I'm confident that they'll be very proud to be part of this process. And for this reason, I will obviously support this. So we have a motion and a second on the table. Please vote. The vote is 6 ayes and no nays, and the motions, the carries, and items 7A or 7B, C, and D are approved. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda is items from citizens present. Mr. Schulke requested to speak once again.
Hello again, Tom Schulke, 7604 East Wolf Canyon. First of all, I would like to state that some of the key provisions of the agreement were not available to citizens. I'm talking the total rent, the option price, some of the really big financial things were not available to the end. This statement that all this stuff was out there for years or weeks or months, that it's just not true. I guess I would like a little advice from this council is, how do I get answers to my questions? I raised a lot of questions and points in my speeches, and they were not addressed in any of your comments. I raised a lot of the same questions in emails that you and I got zero responses from this council on emails. I have been speaking before councils in Mesa for 10 years, and I must say that this council responds, has the least response to emails of any that I've done in 10 years. And I think you need to work at it, and I'd appreciate some advice on how I can get some feedback and response and questions answered from you. It's just not working for me. You certainly got my email if you want to give me some comments on that. Finally, I would like to just make a few issues as I'm a little concerned about this council on how that it's showing the proper respect to citizens of Mesa. I believe that when you put on the ballot, the whole Cubs thing, before a site was known, Before there were any terms really on the documents, there were just outlines, a lot of which conflicted, changed, and seemed to be evolving. You were not showing a lot of respect from the citizens of Mesa. You took the position that the requirements to the city charter were basically fulfilled by having citizens grant a blank check to the council. I don't think that shows respect to the council, and I think it shows a little arrogance on your part that you've been elected to make all the decisions. And I just don't think that's the way a lot of people feel, and I think you guys need to consider that. Secondly, you put the documents up. A lot of the stuff wasn't up until days before this meeting. Some of the other stuff was up, but, you know, people maybe had a week to look at it. Staff is largely unavailable during this past week. And I would say that giving such a period of time for citizens who might be interested to get involved in the city government doesn't show good respect for the citizens, and also isn't good as far as people wanting to get involved in city government when they see what happens when people who try to get involved. And finally, when someone sits there and asks for even a vote on continuing an item, and it doesn't even come up, okay? And when you sit there, questions are raised, points are brought up, and they're not even discussed, and you vote and pass it through. That doesn't show a lot of respect either. That's three cases I'm saying where you didn't show respect on this issue. In the baseball analogy, three strikes and you're out. I just think that this council needs to watch out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schiller. I'm going to correct one thing there since you spoke on it in. And that is absolutely incorrect to say that nobody has responded to you. I know I have responded on several occasions to your emails, as have other members of our council. I don't respond when multiple arguments that are the same argument that were made in the previous email and the previous email and the previous email are raised, because I've already answered that. And I'm a little bit, I understand that you don't agree with this. That is absolutely your right, and I appreciate you having the commitment to come down here and state your beliefs. That's how democracy works, and I appreciate that, and thank you for being involved in that process. But I do believe that we have been responsive to your needs. You don't agree with us. I get that, and that's fine. And I hope that you'll stay involved. As far as us ignoring or whatever, that's absolutely untrue. The second thing, I think the members of this council answered your question on continuance when they voted to approve that. That's how we work here. So we'll do the best we can, and we're moving forward to the next item. So I have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, second Council Member Higgins. Oh, I'm sorry. My goodness. Thank you for reminding me of that. I apologize, Ms. Chavez. You still here? I almost went. Thank heavens I have a couple people. You would have reminded me. Good for you. Okay. I so apologize. I had your card sitting right here, and I forgot about it. So, once again, please state your name and for the record and your address. Okay. Thank you.
Mayor, Dennis, rest of the council. My name is Mary Chavez, and the store address is 326 West Southern Avenue. My September and October water bills are double what the past bills have been. At first, I thought I had made a mistake and had not paid a bill. But when the October bill came, I thought the city made a mistake. I then found out about a new minimum charge of 3,000 gallons of water usage, water used or not. I know all of you realize that we live in the desert and should conserve water. My business uses minimal water, and the city is penalizing us for our conservative use of water. The charge should be toward people who use large or exorbitant amounts of water, not directed toward the people that conserve or use minimal amounts of water. The city is punishing the people who are doing the right thing by using small amounts of water, and it is as though we are being encouraged to use more water. This was an easy way to generate more revenue, I understand, but perhaps not the best way, since there is no incentive to conserve water. One way to generate more revenue and encourage water conservation would be to start the extra charge at, say, 5,000 gallons of use and other increases at appropriate levels of use over the 5,000 gallon mark. That would encourage using less water, and generate revenue appropriately at the same time. I'm sure you would agree that people with pools, people who, for instance, hose off their walks and drives, should be paying an extra premium, while people with, say, desert landscape should not be penalized. As a small business owner who uses little water and is being forced to move due to road construction, I will have to take the added water expense into consideration when I'm looking for a new location. It may not seem like a lot to you, but to my new business, it has a substantial impact. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I wish I could give you an explanation, but since it's on items for citizen presence, I can't. But if you could stick around, I'm sure a staff member can explain to you why that new rate was implemented and that. But I thank you for coming down here. Appreciate that. Okay. Do I have any more blue cards?
Yeah.
I think I'm set this time. Okay. Now we have a motion and a second on the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.